There we go. Okay, welcome everybody to the 2020 annual meeting of the Hopbrook Protection Association. I assume everybody can see the slides. I hope they all can. Yeah. And so let's get started. You don't want to spend all evening here. So now how do I go to the next slide? There we go. So the agenda for tonight is we're going to briefly introduce the board. There'll be the treasurer's membership report, general update, liaison report. We've got some nice views of the ponds and streams to show you all. We need to do an election, and then we will open it to questions and answers. So, by the way, I tend to move through things quickly. If anybody has a question or something, just shout stop. I'm okay with that. So this is the board of directors. I'm Jeff Winston. This is Kathy Winston.
Hi.
Glenn and Terry, you can introduce yourselves briefly. And
hi, I'm Terry.
That's Glenn. And Elise is here. And Rick Booth.
Hello.
And we are the new board of directors. Kathy is our one link to the old board. As I think everybody knows, the old board took a very well-deserved retirement about a year ago. And so what happened was Kathy came home and said they need some new people. So we pulled some new people together and here we are. We'll start with, I'm going to try to get the business out of the way first quickly. Treasurer's report briefly. We have some money. We took in some donations last year and an old reimbursement. We spent some money. Most of it was towards the pond remediation. We ended up with some more money. We are going to be having to pay for the work this year in advance of getting reimbursed from the town, but we do have enough money to cover it. Anybody has any questions on this slide? Okay.
No questions.
Membership. In 2019, we mailed memberships to about 200 addresses. We got 40 paid memberships, a decrease of 18. But last year was kind of a funny year, right? We were in transition. We sent the things out late because of the new board transition. We actually didn't send out till over the summer. And when we sent out, we didn't really have a lot to tell people except that we were raring to go. And so member contributions were down, but it was a transition year. We did some things last year to hopefully improve donations this year. We revamped the website, we created the Facebook group, and we added an online donation platform, which has actually proved fairly popular. I'd say maybe a third of our donations have come in electronically.
Yep.
Shouldn't be in the 2019 report, but I'll mention it as we're here. 2020 is looking better. We increased the mailing list a bit to 233 addresses. And as of today, we have gotten 31 paid memberships totaling $2,500. So, you know, we're about halfway to a good year's collection of money. So that's where we are right now. And we do use the money because we can get grants for very specific purposes, but there's a lot of ancillary costs that are associated with what we're doing, and those have to come out of basically our funds. Any questions? All right, let's get into last year in review and why we're all here. Probably everybody's seen the next two slides, so I'll go through them quickly. This is a pond. This is a pond on water chestnuts. Any questions? So that's why we're here. There is so much to do to clean up the ponds, but after a lot of discussion last year and investigating a lot of different options and doing a lot of research, we concluded that the first step for any plan, any path to cleaning up the ponds was to control and eradicate the water chestnuts. Harvesting doesn't work very well, hand pulling is impractical, and so I think as many people know, we have gone to we plan to use an herbicidal treatment this year that's been proven effective and low risk. If we do nothing, we have a real problem. The water chestnuts spread over most of the pond every year. Every acre of infestation adds 20 cubic yards of organic matter to the bottom. As a result, we get decreased water quality, shallower pond depth, a repugnant smell, lower oxygen levels in the water, which leads to reduction of fish, birds, and native plants. But we make a great breeding ground for mosquitoes, which increases triple E risk. So if we weren't treating this year, the water chestnuts would win. It's very important that we're doing this, and so we are. So some people wonder, well, we harvest in past years, why not try that? It didn't work very well. It obviously didn't get rid of the water chestnuts. We can't do it very well. We can't do, gristmill pond's the most important one, and you can't really harvest there because it's got lots of subsurface rocks. And also, it's becoming more clear that mechanical harvesting of water chestnuts disperses other invasive species. It's also a dangerous thing to do. In past years, the old board was able to pull together some equipment from here, some daredevil people from there, and they were able to go out and do a reasonably good job. But the people and the equipment aren't available to us anymore. And doing it properly with proper insurance and stuff can be very expensive, and it doesn't provide a lasting effect. So we're not doing it. What are other things we could be doing? Well, dredging would be great. The deeper ponds would reduce the growth of the water chestnuts and can remove most seeds. It also removes all the phosphorus that's fell to the bottom of the ponds. But dredging is very expensive, like millions of dollars expensive. So we've put that one on the shelf for now. The other thing, and maybe we'll talk about this a little at the end of the presentation, is water level reduction. You can reduce the stagnant water, and it doesn't kill the seeds, but it also creates a lot of changes to the ecosystem. And I think we'll get back to that a little later. So what did we do? Well, we started out trying to look at all the different options. And after some discussions and a lot of research, Glenn, Terry, Elise, Rick, everybody put in a lot of time into this, we realized that what's been going on, we talked to people in other towns, and there actually is a subcommittee of CISMA devoted to water chestnuts. So we actually went to a meeting where we talked to people who were dealing with water chestnuts in a number of different towns. And what's now coming out as a really good approach is to use this particular herbicide called ClearCast. It's been around for over 10 years. It appears to be a very safe thing to do. We didn't take their word for it. Glenn, whose many, many credits are up on the screen, did a thorough research study of it. So what we, I think I might be missing a slide I wanted. I think I actually am missing a slide that I wanted, or it got put in the wrong place. Hold up a sec. Yeah, this slide probably should have been put earlier in the presentation. So what did we do? We went out and we got funding from this. We did the research, and you know what? I'm not very good at this. Let's go back here. So let's talk a little about ClearCast and what it is. And I will turn that over to Glenn for the next few slides.
So we basically, as Jeff said, we don't have a unique problem. There are hundreds of ponds in the Northeast that are infested with water chestnut and have the same challenges we do. And they're becoming more and more concerned about it, not only because of smell and the decreased water quality and the accelerated degradation of the pond because of all the organic matter that falls to the bottom, but also because of mosquitoes. So a lot of the other towns with these problems have turned to ClearCast. And so it's been reviewed quite thoroughly. The nice thing about using it for water chestnut is that you only have to get a decent level of it on the surface. You don't have to treat the entire water column. You just need to get it on the surface and get it absorbed by the leaves. So you end up with pretty low levels in the total water of the pesticide, of the herbicide. It's been reviewed by state and federal agencies, and they found it to be very safe. It's used very extensively in soybean and other bean agriculture in the Midwest. When the timing of application and the extent of application is right, it's very effective in killing water chestnuts. And we basically got support from a number of different organizations that are also concerned about water quality. Next slide. And this just goes over some of the evidence that we found for the safety of this. It has to be mixed with adjuvant, with a soap-like compound, to get it to disperse properly in the water. And the state of Massachusetts reviewed the adjuvants and found that they were safe also. So we felt pretty comfortable about using it in this way. And this just compares it to some of the other herbicides that have been used, like 2,4-D. And these older herbicides were more persistent in quantities in the environment than ClearCast. And in fact, EPA doesn't have a water drinking restriction once the ClearCast levels are down to pretty low levels, because they just didn't find any evidence of biologic effect at these low levels. So back to you, Jeff.
And I would mention that since Hop Brook downstream of the ponds goes into the same vicinity as some of the town wells, we had a detailed interaction with the water department to get them to tell us whether they thought there would be any risk created due to what we were doing. And they made very clear they thought there was no risk. I think we got a letter from them, actually. Okay, so effectiveness. Glenn, you want to do this one?
Yeah, just mention that we had a chance to look at the pre-treatment and post-treatment reports from a number of areas in New York and eastern Massachusetts. And, you know, we were especially interested in the ones in Franklin, Littleton, and Harvard, these ponds that were like ours, shallow, lots of muck, heavy water chestnut infestations, and the Nashua River also near Pepperell and Groton. And it seemed to be when it was when the timing of application was right, it seemed to be very effective at killing off the water chestnut and preventing it from reaching the seed stage. And using this approach, it won't get 100%. We anticipate that there'll be some need for a small amount of hand pulling. And you have to treat for a couple of years in succession, because the seeds can live in the muck for a long period of time. But what people have seen is that after the first year or two of successful killing off the water chestnut, there's much less that you need to treat in the subsequent years.
You want to explain these, or?
Yeah, so this is the best example of a before and after. You can see the water chestnut density, and this is right before, this is the stretch of the Nashua River that is between Ayer and Groton. And this is the part that's closer to, it's closer to Pepperell, where the dam is. And you can is between Groton and Pepperell. And you can see the very dense infestation on that impoundment of the river on the left. And then after treatment, it was very, very sparse, pretty much sparse to just trace water chestnut. So it was very effective.
So what? So once we realized this was the path, we started out, well, we did the research, or Glenn did a lot of most of the research, and we put together what we thought would be a good case. And then we started out by going to the CPC to get a grant, because this treatment's expensive. We didn't have nearly the money to see it through. So we applied to CPC for a, actually we applied for a 5-year grant. They gave us a 3-year grant that has ample funding to pay for the treatments, but it's limited to paying for the treatments themselves and that stuff. Now, this is a very interesting thing. CPC grants have to be approved at town meeting, which in the normal universe would have happened by now. But in our new reality, I don't believe has even been scheduled yet. Pat?
The plan right now is for town meeting on Tuesday, September 15th.
Okay.
Which apparently they were talking about holding the marathon on Monday the 14th and making it a state holiday. So they said, well, maybe that would be a bad day to have town meeting. So that's the plan right now. That's, I guess for me, the thing that's up in the air is normally you approve something at town meeting and then your funding becomes available at the beginning of the next fiscal year, which would be July 1st. And you guys said you had to treat before July 1st, but that you could, you know, you could cash flow cover for that period. I don't actually know when the money becomes available if we approve it at town meeting in September. And I mean, it should be, it should in theory become available right away, but generally we have to get some kind of approvals after town meeting to be sure we didn't do something just weird. So I would, I mean, actually want to ask about when does money, specifically Community Preservation Act funds approved at September 15th town meeting, become actually available?
That would be a good question for us to ask a selectman.
Well, consider a selectman ask. Let me cap this into something and I'll try and find out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. We are, we can fund 1 year's treatment. I mean, what would worry me more is if we weren't going to get this money until July 2021, that might put us in a bind for next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything you can find out, let us know. Thank you for raising that.
Yeah, well, I've got, I mean, I must believe that this will all be straightened out for what would have been FY21 prior to the beginning of FY22. But
right.
That said, let me ask.
Okay. Is this funding at risk at all because of, you know, revenue decreases for the city or town or any other situations because of the current pandemic?
Okay, two ways to play. One of them is me, and I'm not speaking for Community Preservation Commission or for the Board of Selectmen or anybody. This is me. But my understanding is that Community Preservation Act funds are, under state law, limited to paying for the four things that you can pay for. So open space, recreation, affordable housing, and historical preservation. And that there's nothing about COVID that changes that. There's still, that's what the money must be used for. And the money can only be approved by town meeting if it is brought to them by the Community Preservation Committee. So it's, I don't personally see any reason that this would be at risk.
It's a different pocket too. It doesn't come out of the town general fund.
No, it's a completely separate pocket.
Right.
Okay, and so my strong personal belief is that it won't. This is not at risk, and there's nothing else you could do with it anyway. That said, it's just me, never say never.
Right.
Are we competing against anything?
No, we competed to get the grant. And, you know, we would assume that the CPC knows how much money they have to give out, and they don't give grants out in excess of what they have to give out.
I'll confirm that there was enough money received that it will cover all of the applications that the CPC approved.
The big thing, though,
including this one,
it does have to be approved at town meeting. So I encourage everybody here to go on, or however they decide to do it on September 15th, to participate and vote in favor of our funding, because that does need to pass town meeting.
Yeah, this is Gary Christelis from the Wayside Inn. I just want to confirm Pat's understanding. We actually had to recently look into this within the last month or so, and exactly as Pat stated is the case. My only concern is not the reality, but the perception. And that's something that I just recommend that you get ahead of. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to be thinking that this is going to result in, you know, maybe less funding for the schools or less, you know, road work or whatever. So I think the messaging has to be made that this money has to be spent from that bucket, and it can only be spent for those purposes.
Right. Oh, we'll make a good case. So we got that approval. Thank you. So we got that approval, and then we went to CONCOM. And the first step with CONCOM was a little more interesting than we expected, because they had to treat us, you know, if you were going to do something to a wetland on your property that might affect your two neighbors, then they need you to get your neighbors to sign off that they're aware there's a public hearing. And they had to handle us in that manner. So we had to go out and get acknowledgement from all 65 abutters individually that they were aware there was a public hearing about this. So there was a lot of door-to-door visiting, there was a lot of mailing, there was a lot of knocking on doors and stuffing in mailboxes by the board. It was a huge effort. The good news is we were able to get everybody's signature, and along the way we discovered everybody was very supportive of what we were doing. We didn't have one person say, oh God, no, I don't want you to do that. They were all, thank God you're doing something. So that was good. The next steps, on March 9th, I think, the CONCOM, we went to them, we gave them all our information, they thought about it, they asked us questions. They sent us off to do some additional homework assignments. We did the assignments. We gave them back to them. Everything we gave them is in the Facebook group, and I think almost everything is in the annual report as well, if you want to read all the information we had to gather. But in the end, they unanimously approved the our request, which I'm told is rather rare. They're not big fans of herbicides generally, as they shouldn't be. The state, federal and state permitting is going on even as we speak. We've hired obviously a company to do this, and there is one company that seems to be, they're the 500-pound gorilla around here. All the towns use them. All the towns generally like them. So we're using them as well. We did seek some other quotes, but we didn't really find anybody else who looked as competitive. So they've done a vegetation and pond survey for us, and that's a good example of something that cost us a few thousand dollars at least, yeah, and doesn't get covered by the CPC funding, as well as our applications to CONCOM were, I think, a couple of thousand dollars before we were done.
Yeah.
So that's happening, and the wheels are turning, and despite the coronavirus stuff, we're going to be treating this summer. We're on their list. We're on their schedule. And they will probably, we will have this going now in decreasing amounts for the next 5 years that will hopefully end up in cleaning up the pond significantly. So that's the good news. The other news is that that's just the first step to cleaning up the ponds. There are ongoing stack challenges. There are going to be other invasives. It's not uncommon when you clean up the water chestnut for milfoil to take its place, and then you have to attack the milfoil. We still have issues. We have endless decades of phosphorus deposited at the bottom of our ponds from the Easterly wastewater treatment plant. I guess let me back off just if anybody's new to this and give the quick history, which is that back in before 1973, these ponds were healthy ponds that you could go swim in. Actually, when we bought our property, our deeds said that there were some easements on it. So we actually drove down to the Middlesex County Registry of Deeds in Cambridge and pulled the easements. And they were easements allowing us to dam the pond, to build docks out to the pond, because this was originally a very recreational waterway. We live on Stearns Mill Pond. And then in 1973, the city of Marlboro built their Easterly wastewater treatment plant that started putting effluent into the Sudbury Pond system. And then the water wasn't so good anymore. And the phosphorus buildup caused a lot of other problems. And the original Hopbrook Protection Association, of which we have Ursula Lyons here tonight. Yay, Ursula, who fought this for years and years.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, because I wanted, after you finish, I want to just add what really happened.
Okay, we can't hear you all that well, though.
Okay, well, all right,
give me, see if you can tune up your mic a bit. We'll do that. Let me just finish the quick history. And eventually, these people were able to get the permit for that plant modified such that they had to install several
million
dollars of equipment to reduce the phosphorus that they were outputting into the water system. Unfortunately, by then, for some reasons, and Ursula maybe can address that, water chestnuts started appearing. So as we fought one thing down, the next one came up. Go ahead, Ursula, if you got something you want to add.
If you can't hear me, let me know. Can you hear me now?
It's okay.
Actually, Jeff, the problem started in the 19th century when total sewage was dumped into the Hopbrook. It was raw sewage, and that started the problem. Then, actually, in 1973, when only liquid sewage was being dumped, that's the Clean Water Act came about in 73, and Marlboro built the state-of-the-art plants in 73. And we moved in 74, and the water was pretty good then. It wasn't until 85 that the phosphorus started coming back, and that started the problem with the algae, the hydrodictyon and the lemna, but mostly the hydrodictyon. No water chestnuts then, as you said. So then we started fighting to get a better permit from Marlboro, and it wasn't till, and we succeeded, but it wasn't until 2015 that Marlboro finally put in the state-of-the-art plans. And actually, the algae did lessen, but that's when the water chestnuts came. So that's my knowledge of the history, and you're wonderful. Don't misunderstand me.
No, thank you, Ursula. I only got here in 87, so you know a lot. You've been here longer than I have. Okay. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's it. Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, this is the first step, but the board, hopefully with help from other people, are going to continue to work towards improving the water quality throughout the entire Hopbrook watershed and try to restore the ponds to be a recreational asset. One thing I'm just going to throw this out there, and it's really just something to think about because it was a little bit of an eye-opening thing for me. We were at this meeting with the people from the other towns who were dealing with this, and the gentleman from Framingham made the comment that what we, Sudbury, should try to do is to get an annual line item from the selectmen on the budget to, you know, to do whatever we need to do every year to keep the water quality up. And when I talked to him a bit, he had a very interesting take on this. He said that, you know, think about it. What you have here is you have a man-made pond, basically. There's a dam. So these ponds are all man-made. And that's why you have stagnant water, and that's why you have problems. And you can keep it clean, but it doesn't stay clean by itself. Every year, you've either got to treat the invasives or there's something you have to do. And, you know, maybe long term, there's a few different ways you go. You get that line item, you get a budget item. You know, they have some ponds in Framingham and that are, you know, are in the middle of parks and they're high use recreational assets. And they spend $50,000, $60,000 a year to keep them that way. The other end of the spectrum is you, and I'm just being hypothetical here to make a point, you get rid of the dams and you let them go back to their natural state, which is more of a meadow than a pond, and then you don't have to spend any taxpayer money on them because you don't have the stagnant water that creates all the problems. And I know I'm simplifying, and I'm not suggesting we do either. It's just, it's an interesting way to look at it as we as the board consider where do we want to go with this long term. I mean, you know, different ponds have different solutions. Obviously, and I got to say this for Gary because I see he's concerned. No, obviously, Gristmill Pond has to be maintained as a pond. That's a high-use recreational asset. Some of us have talked about the possibility that, well, if Stearns Mill turned back into a meadow, would that be the worst thing in the world? Hardy Mill's kind of in the middle. None of this is going to happen anytime soon. We're going to eradicate the water chestnuts. We're going to see what other challenges come up. We're going to try to maintain these as recreational assets to the town. That's our goal. It was an interesting way to look at things that I had never heard before, and I just wanted to share it.
Is there ways to increase the value of a recreational asset so to the town so they would want to invest in them?
Well, that's another point, too, is some people have asked us, you know, we talk to these people when we go to the CISMA meeting. The people who are in charge of taking care of these assets in the other towns are all paid town employees, and all their work is funded by the town, whereas, you know, we're still funding this. Well, on one hand, you could say, well, we're funding this by contributions and grants. Another argument might be that by using CPC grants, we're actually funding it with town money in the most efficient way. But there has been some question in the longer term of whether the town wants to take a bigger role in this rather than trusting it to this little ragtag group of volunteers. These are things that, you know, we're talking about as we look out several years, and you're going to be hearing more about, and we are definitely looking for other questions and other opinions on it. And we can come back to this in the Q&A, if that's okay with everybody, because we all just have a little left to do. Elise, this is your slide.
Yes, so for our membership, so we are members of other nearby town organizations that have similar goals to ours. So they're listed here. And then really in the last year, what we've been focused on is communicating with other towns, finding out, you know, feedback from these other towns that have similar issues to ours as to, you know, what they've tried, what's worked, what's not, how they've liked using this company Solitude, which is really, like Jeff had said, the only game in town. But it was all positive. So it was nice to, it's nice, we're not trying to recreate the wheel here. So anything we can learn from our neighboring towns, we're trying to do that. So we're keeping those relationships and making sure that we're, you know, using them in the future as we can as well.
Okay. We'll get there. Okay. You know what? Let's just get this out of the way. We have to do reappoint officers, or is it just?
No, just the board.
Just
we
the board.
Officers.
Okay, so I'd like to make a motion to reelect Rick Booth and Glenn Pransky and Kathy Winston to 2-year terms on the board. I need a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Raise your hands, guys.
Okay. All right, thank you. Terry, do you want to show your, you want to take
sure.
over?
Yes, you just want to stop sharing screen and I can, I can get that up. Yeah. Okay. One second here. So I just wanted to remind everybody that most of Hop Brook are not our ponds. Most of Hop Brook is this beautiful waterway that has a big, wide bank to it and floodplain to it, and it's really lovely. And I think now, especially with COVID, there's so many people enjoying walking along or kayaking in the beautiful Hop Brook. So let's just take a minute and take a look at that.
It's here.
Can you all see this?
Yep.
Good.
Elise,
okay.
Elise, what do you got for us?
Okay, let me share my screen. This will be pretty short, but it's neat to see. Can everybody see?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So this is a drone video of Chris Mill. Or Stearns Mill. Some people might be seeing their houses right now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A And the yellow are those long yellow grasses.
Because we need to have a list for everybody, Linda Office, can you tell me who you are? You're muted.
Yes, okay, here I am. I was hoping to get a chance to introduce myself. I'm just meeting you all this evening. I'm brand new. I'm in the midst of joining your, becoming a member. My son, Manny, is actually working with Glenn and Terry. So he's kind of he's my inspiration for joining in. And I want to take a moment to thank Glenn and Terry. It's Glenn and Terry that he's working with, right, you two?
Yes.
Yeah. I want to thank you for giving him the opportunity to work with the organization. We don't live in Sudbury. We live in Weston, but he grew up coming out to Stearns Mill and fishing as just a little guy. So it really means a lot to us to be able to maybe give something back to your organization and support the health of the brook. And anyway, I really enjoyed the presentation tonight. I learned a lot. I especially enjoyed your presentation, Terry. It was your video. It was very inspirational and beautiful.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. And it's great working with him.
Oh, it's a pleasure working with him. We're so lucky.
The same way. We feel very lucky, too, that he's getting a chance to work with you.
You want to talk briefly about what that's about, Glenn and Terry?
Yeah, just very briefly. So we have this wonderful college student who approached us and said, you know, I'm really concerned about water quality also. What can I do to help out? And we've had a great dialogue, and we're thinking about doing some evaluation, looking at historical data, doing some sampling this year, and trying to formulate try to develop an analysis that'll tell us what the current levels are of various pollutants, what impact they're having, and what would be the effect of different strategies we could pursue to improve water quality.
Cool.
And yeah, Manny's got a great perspective. He has an advisor who's a very experienced limnologist, so it's a wonderful opportunity for all of us.
And Elise is putting together, connecting the organizations to finding the equipment that he'll need for the sampling. So we're really lucky. Yeah.
Great. And thank you for the video, Elise. That was a cool video. I watched it earlier. I'm sorry, Ken, your last name?
Yeah, it's Ken Walker.
I'm not actually
in a butter, but short walk through the woods to that swayback bridge in the video, that's where I am.
Okay. All right. We've got everyone identified. All right. So finishing up the pre-prepared part of the meeting. So the last slide we have is how can you get involved? Well, first of all, please vote yes for our CPC article. Otherwise, we won't be doing year two. Experience the Hop Brook, especially this time of year. Hike, canoe, kayak, mountain bike. Best time of year is now. If you have good photos, send them to us. We can put them on our website. We can put them on the Facebook page. Become a member. We do subsist on your donations. And as we're trying to do more stuff, everything costs a little money. Join the Facebook group. I'm trying to keep that Facebook group. A lot of people say, I don't do Facebook. I don't do social media. I don't do social media. But to be honest, I go into Facebook. Why? Because there's information there. I don't know. I hope everybody here who lives in Sudbury is aware of the group called Sudbury Bulletin Board, because if you're not, you're missing out on a great place to find out everything that's going on in town, from why is that road closed and why were those sirens, to important stuff. It's not, I know some people are like, well, I don't want to see people fighting with each other, so don't join one Sudbury. You don't have to do that. But I definitely recommend Sudbury Bulletin Board. And I would definitely recommend joining the Hop Brook Protection Association Facebook group. It's called Hop Brook Protection Association. You don't have to post there, But everything we're doing, I post there, so you can read and you can find out what we're doing. Why don't we do the website? Because websites are hard to edit and maintain these days. We had to pay people to clean ours up and, you know, get it set up for things. But Facebook, all you can say about them, they make it very easy to do this, make it very easy to have a platform to communicate with people. So consider using this as an excuse to get onto Facebook, and please join our group. And of course, talk to your neighbors, help them get excited about the asset, help them get involved with what we're doing as well. And this concludes the prepared, for what it was worth, part of the presentation. And I will open this to questions. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed the last slide. I hit the button, but nothing happened. Thank you all. There's your clean pond. And now, any questions? Comments, input, thoughts?
I've got a question.
Go.
I'm new to this, so forgive my ignorance if that's the case. We've talked about, or I've heard a lot of talk of removal. Is there any talk of replacement with native plants? Is there a way to plant to shade them out, like to use a gardening method to shade out unwanted plants with native larger plants?
Shade out the water chestnuts. Glenn?
Yes.
That's a Glenn question.
That was,
Yeah,
so the problem, Patrick, is that these water chestnuts are, they grow so quickly that they displace everything else. Once you get them removed, ideally native plants like water lilies might take their place. We've actually seen a little bit of that in Littleton, where they've gotten rid of the water chestnuts and natives come in, but no one's found a strategy yet to sort of put the right stuff in there and then displace this, because it's just so fast growing and prolific. And it gets started earlier in the season before everything else does, so it gets a jump on it. But if you want to see an example of post-eradication success, there's a little pond in Harvard in the woods that is now back to native water lilies.
Nice.
Lincoln Pond on what's the street, Terry?
Oh, I don't. We can get.
Yeah, I think it's Century Hill Road, but the Lincoln Pond is an example of where it's a much smaller pond, but where that did happen.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hey, Glenn or Jeff, you guys, can you guys explain to everyone who may not be familiar how the ClearCast is applied, this process? Because I think we haven't talked about that, and it's probably a lot simpler than people may assume.
Oh, yeah, I could talk to that. Basically, what they do is they put a very shallow airboat in the pond, and they have a sprayer that has this sort of oily mixture of ClearCast that they just spray over the areas where the water chestnut is living. And they have to use an airboat because you can't have a propeller or anything. You know, the idea is to find a day that has no wind, a couple of days where there's going to be no sun. So you get this thin, thin film to lay on top of it. The leaves of the water chestnut soak up the ClearCast. It goes into the roots and kills the plant. And after about a day, any of the remaining stuff is broken up by bacteria and sunlight. And they do that treatment sometime in this year. It'll probably be late June when the water chestnut has grown, but before it's developed seeds. And that'll knock it way back. And then they have to come back again in August when there's often a second regrowth of water chestnut and repeat the same thing.
It's like one seed develops a plant that has 12 seeds. So it grows more than an order of magnitude. It multiplies more of an order of magnitude. So You want to get them before they're seeds.
Can I ask about, you'd mentioned that the water chestnut provides like the perfect habitat for mosquitoes. How does that work? I mean, I know that there's a significant, last year the public health crisis was Triple E, and I have a feeling this is going to be a bad season for Triple E too, if we have time out from COVID to pay attention to it. And I'm just curious about how that works.
So there was a study, it's like 25 years old, that the Massachusetts DCR did. And what they found was that ponds infested with water chestnut had much higher levels of mosquito larvae than ponds that didn't have a water chestnut infestation. And what they found was that the area around the flower, so it's a tiny flower that comes up in the center of like a rosette of leaves, that's kind of a little protected bowl of water, and the mosquito larvae love it because it kind of protects that little space of water from wind and wave action. And that seems to be the way that the water chestnut promotes mosquito growth.
Okay, thank you.
Could we use that information as leverage to perhaps get a line item in the town budget? Because obviously last year, Triple E was a huge impact to the town budget and needing to manage the way schools were doing recess and so forth and spraying, and so, which probably was a much bigger cost than the cost of treating the ponds.
It's an interesting point. I think that was probably a factor that swayed people towards let's get this done. But, maybe we'll have mosquito counts and we can show what the impact is of reducing water chestnuts. I mean, if it has as much of an impact on the mosquito population as these studies suggest, Noah, we should see a big reduction in the number of mosquitoes.
And, you know, in the short term, we do see, you know, CPC, town meeting not voting for us notwithstanding, we do have the funding to do what needs to be done in the short term. But it is true that in the longer term, out 3 years, 4, 5, 6 years, we do want to have some discussions with the town about who should really be managing this. You know, the town or volunteers. It's tricky though, because if the volunteers are managing it, then I think we get access to CPC money, and I don't know how that would work. And I don't want to get into that tonight, but we definitely want to have discussions with the town about the best way to manage this long term. And yeah, the town has a vested interest in seeing these things cleaned up for many reasons. And in fact, Pat has been incredibly, I just have to take a moment out and call out Pat. She has been incredibly supportive of the work we've been doing, and she has been able to get things done for us and get information for us, and I'm voting for her.
Thank you, Pat.
But thank you, Pat.
Hey, thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
thank you, but I mean, the presentation before CPC was very impressive. And then you guys went in front of CONCOM, and that was very, very impressive. And I mean, without Conservation Commission, this would go nowhere.
Yeah.
And so that was critical, and that was just well prepared, well thought out, and a good explanation of alternatives. So I mean, that's on you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, well, it's a team effort. It definitely is a team effort. Any other questions, comments, concerns? Bruce?
Yeah, just a comment that the Conservation Commission, which I'm a member, really values Hop Brook Protection Association and things of that. What I don't know many towns that have the luxury of having a a dedicated group looking at the principal waterway through town. I mean, you can't flinch without seeing Hop Brook somewhere near you. So, so I just wanted to pass that on, that it's a very valuable asset. And you know, there's a lot of overlap jurisdiction between conservation and Hop Brook. And, you know, Hop Brook puts Hop Brook Protection Association puts a magnifying glass on that one waterway. And it's all within Conservation Commission jurisdiction. And so, you know, you're really doing a job that is very helpful for the town, and it really supplements what we do very, very well. So thank you.
You guys were very supportive of us. We appreciate that.
Yep. It's been very open-minded. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I think Lori deserves a hat off to her.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes.
I should mention that. Yes. We are very lucky in this town to have
Capone.
Thank you. Lori Capone is our, I'm getting old. Lori Capone is our conservation coordinator. She is a town employee. She does an absolutely awesome job, and she has taken a huge interest in what we've been doing, which we were very pleasantly surprised. Again, when we went to that CISMA meeting to meet with people with the other waterways, Lori walked in and we're like, oh, hi, Lori, do you normally come to these? Why are you here? And she said, well, I'm here because you guys are here. And she has been supportive with it for us all along. And we are very lucky in this town to have this person in this role.
And she's very, very energetic and very appropriate.
Yeah, you guys made an awesome hire. Okay, other questions, concerns, issues?
Is there any support you need from the folks that live on ponds during the application? So Noah and I, this is Ethan Cash, I live on Carding Mill Pond. Noah and I both live on that pond, and we're both fairly new to the neighborhood and are very eager to keep it a very vibrant waterway that it is right now. I know in about a month it won't look like it does now. And I'm volunteering my own personal time since I'm home.
we got it.
to support the, you know, when the guys show up, is there something that, you know, you want somebody out there to just monitor them, or how does it work?
They have this down. They've done hundreds of ponds, and basically they're going to post and we're going to help post people just stay away for a day.
Okay.
You know, that's the only restriction when they do this. They just want people out of there. But my strong recommendation to you is, I think there's about 2 or 3 weeks left before it gets gross. Get out there on your boat and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you, it's spectacular. The pond is just fabulous.
And also, from the slideshow, you can see the Hop Brook has sections that all year long look gorgeous. Because in those deep channels, we don't have these invasives. Mm-hmm. And we have the different grasses that grow and all this wildlife. So I don't think we need to be, you know, we don't need to be defined just by the ponds. The natural state of the Hop Brook is gorgeous. So
if you have a chance, put your kayak in at the Dutton Road Bridge near French Road and go downstream for 2.5 miles. It's really spectacular.
I'd also mention that Lori plans to be out there the day they're treating. She's going to keep an eye on them. And we will post, I will post to the Facebook group to let people know what's happening the day it's happening. With any warnings they have or such, I will probably use the Facebook group. I'll also use the email list I've been slowly building, which I think I've got up now to about 87 names. But Lori intends to be out there. She is, this is a big thing for the, you know, as I mentioned, the CONCOM doesn't allow herbicides very often. So they're going to be focused that, you know, they are all over this. There's a detailed set of conditions.
No, I was there for Glenn's presentation. That was, I was really impressed. you know, it looked like at one point they could have it could have gone either way. So you guys did a fantastic job. So I just want to commend you guys all for that.
Thanks. Well, it's a team effort. It's a team effort. We're very lucky to have a group where, you know, people have done, everyone in our group has done a lot of work to pull together that information.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is this is like one of CONCOM's big projects for the summer. So they've specified a lot of specific conditions that Solitude has to follow, and they're going to be watching it. They're going to be taking it very personally. They're going to be watching mm-hmm. over it, which is good because, you know, as volunteers, we are only going to go so far. We can get the boat rolling, but at some point we have to turn it over to the professionals. And luckily in town, we've got a great professional.
You mentioned, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say to Ethan and other people that are new to the area and really love their section of the Hop Brook, I hope you'll come and join us and, you know, come to meetings and come with ideas, because you probably have ideas if you're living right on the shore.
So, yeah, one of my ideas, you mentioned you have 233 members today on the mailing list. Do we know what the total number of people who live on the Hop Brook, and could we do something to try and increase the number of people on the mailing list and also members?
Let me clarify some of those numbers.
Okay.
We have 65 people who own property either under or abutting Hop Brook.
Okay.
We had to go talk to all of them. We yep. have a mailing list of 233 people who live on or near or in the vicinity that we send an annual letter to, hoping they will join and donate. Of those 233, we have numbers on the order of 40 to 50 that actually join and donate.
So when you look at our members, Noah, we're missing a lot of people who live along the brook that's not near a pond. And we really could use help in terms of growing our membership to get those people too, because they're also Hop Brook above.
Well, that's
don't have
true.
To be on the pond.
That's so, the mailing went to people who were primarily around the ponds. This year we decided not yet to extend it to people who live on the brook downstream of the ponds, because I think we were deciding whether the ROI on that was good. And we might yet do that.
The reason I ask is because I moved here from California, and we had in Oakland, California, Hills, and we had a private protection group that we had to try and raise funding for. And ultimately, we went door to door to try and get funding for those people, and we created signs to put in the yard saying, I support, you know, the local security. I mean, it really kind of encouraged people to support. So maybe we can make signs and say, I support Hop Brook Protection Association or something like that to put in our yards, which might encourage our neighbors to do the same.
Sounds like, Noah, we could use you.
I'm in marketing. I can't help it.
The neighborhood. We're happy
yeah.
to have you. Yay.
Yeah.
Bruce?
I completely agree with Noah. I think that we guys, we're missing a huge potential group of people who have no clue the hard work that went into getting Marlboro, you know, wastewater treatment facility to be in line with regulations, to all the work that you guys have done to get rid of the water chestnut and reduce the threat of triple E. You need to make it more than just the people who love to be outdoors and happen to live on these places. I think there's a huge opportunity there. Happy to, and I'm happy to throw my hat in to help.
Yay. And I think Bruce had his hand up.
Yeah, Bruce.
So, yeah, a number of comments. First of all, yes, it is the brook is beautiful away from the ponds where there's no choking off. They go straight through my property. So apparently you did not reach out to people that are along the stream portions, because we didn't receive any notification. Obviously, we'd be supportive, but just a little feedback.
Yeah, you did. You're on the mailing list.
Yeah.
We didn't have to sign anything.
We didn't sign.
Oh, well, that's something different. That list was generated by Laurie based on land maps and black magic. We didn't question it. She gave us a list and said, these are the signatures I need. And we didn't question it.
Because the treatment was in.
And what it might be for you, Bruce, is it might be the difference. Are you directly on a pond or are you on a stream?
As the stream goes through my property.
Right. Well, you're not. She only. And you can have this discussion with her. Apparently, she felt that for the hearing, she only needed people who were on directly on the ponds.
Okay. All right.
But I think what Bruce and Ethan and Noah are saying is that's a whole group that should be engaged because the Hop Brook is this, it's the largest tributary of the Sudbury River. It's really long. A lot of people that live on it and a lot of people that want to see it protected.
Well,
yeah, I would totally agree, Jeff. Jeff, I mean, in my personal capacity, you know, I live at Dutton and French and I doubt my neighbors are members, and I do think you need to absolutely elevate the visibility of this group and this effort. I would say, especially within the Wayside and Historic District, which is 5-acre minimum lots and a lot of people who have a lot of interest in the quality of the environment there.
Well, you know, I don't want people to think nothing's been done. That list that we've sent out for the mailing includes pretty much all of Dutton Road and all the roads that are near the ponds. We've also, over the course of last year towards this, stuck several flyers in people's boxes. In terms of getting people interested and getting them to join the Facebook group and start to participate, we went out and we did flyers around the ponds, and we also went all the way down the stream, all the way out. We went
Blueberry Hill.
We went out as far as Blueberry Hill. We went all the way down all the side roads down Pratt's Mill Road. So we've been trying.
No, I think you've done a great job with that. But I think it was I think it was Ethan who was saying, which I completely agree with, is broadening the message here and the impact beyond just the folks who are bordering or who live right on the stream of the ponds here.
Well, anybody who wants to come to the next meeting and propose some initiatives that they can execute, I welcome that.
Yeah, well, for one, I love the idea of the lawn signs, for example. I mean, just a vote yes on saving.
If somebody knows how to do that, I mean, just don't come to the next meeting and propose great ideas that other people can execute. You can come, and if we like the idea, you're going to execute it, we welcome you.
Jeff, you know what my problems are.
It's a group that'll give you a lot of help, believe me. We all work together.
Yeah, we'll work together.
This is a great idea to focus on a lawn sign campaign that, I mean, the specific issue is getting a yes vote at the next town meeting, but what a great way to build visibility.
Right.
Actually, I was thinking about, when's the right time to do this, because you can't do it all the time. But yeah, maybe doing it in the late summer, building up towards town meeting.
Yep.
Yes.
And it's also a time when I've never seen.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot more people in Sudbury are walking their streets, walking their dogs, jogging, biking. They're out, trying to get
trying to get out of their houses. Yeah.
So it's a good time to do it.
Or give people little walks so they can see different sections of it. Yeah.
That's actually a fantastic idea. I know a lot of us here, border the Hop Brook, but I mean, what a great idea to put a special sign that says, a viewpoint or scenic view to the Hop Brook and have them, lettered or numbered so people can almost like a scavenger hunt of finding, all these beautiful views that we have.
Yeah.
Did you get to notifying from your list the people before you do the application, or you think you're better off not doing that?
I'm sorry, Bruce, I didn't quite get the whole question.
Say it again.
Whether notifying the abutters when you're ready to do the application, would that be a good idea or not a good idea?
I believe, Bruce, that we are required to notify the abutters right before the application is being done.
Okay.
Actually, I think that Lori's taking, far as I know, Lori's taking care of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of us has to do it.
No, I think she may be taking care of it. She might be doing it with mailing some formal notice or something. Bruce, it's a great question for Lori next time you see her.
Yeah, I'll bump it by her.
And if she says she's expecting us to do something, tell her to let me know, because I'm not aware of being on the hook for anything right now.
Okay.
Maybe there's a disconnect.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
All right, it's 8:45. Any final questions or Noah, you had one?
No, I was just going to say I have to go and help put some kids to bed. I just want to say thank you very much for all the passion and hard work that's gone into this, and look forward to being involved and maybe even executing around something as simple as a lawn sign. So,
oh, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will post
the next meeting on the Facebook page, so we'll let people know, and anyone who wants to come to the next meeting, which will be via Zoom, that you are welcome to come.
So many good ideas.
Thank you.
It'll probably be in about 4 weeks.
Yep. Hey, okay. Just quickly, Jeff, if you do decide to do the lawn signs, I mean, you know, of course we'll arrange at the Wayside Inn to put them no longer Bristol. So.
Great. Thank you, Gary. Thank you for coming. Right. By the way, everybody, Gary and the guys at the Wayside Inn have been really supportive. We got to thank them too. They have been very supportive. They have shown up at every hearing and explained to the CPC and explained to the CONCOM how this ties in with maintaining the Wayside Inn as a town asset. And we couldn't have done this without those guys.
Thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks for the great work, guys. Thank you.
Okay. Have a good evening, everybody.
Bye now.
Bye, everybody.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.